Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
Always locked on heat. Biscayne, South Beach. Goldberg and Ramil. Talking heat, body chill. Got the stats in the news. Got the facts and the views. Never know what they gon' say. Mailbag on a Monday. Pat Riles got the pack ride. Coach Spo got the know-how. Three bands in the raps now. Heat Nation, that's a packed house. Heat talk at the game time. Heat talk every day. I'm always locked on heat. Got it locked on heat. Always locked on heat. Keep it locked on heat. Seat geek for the cheap. But today got the heat.
And now, your locked on heat hopes. Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is David Ramil. My co-host Wes Goldberg isn't available today, so I'm recording a solo edition of the show, but I've got a very special guest today, an amazing writer whose words have appeared in Sports Illustrated, ESPN.com, The Athletic, Vice Sports, and several other outlets, including Bleacher Report, the latest of which is the reason she's here. Welcome to Sirat Sohi. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, absolutely. So about Bleacher, as part of BR Mag's NBA season preview, which, of course, the season kicks off tonight, or yesterday, for listeners who won't hear this until Wednesday, you recently wrote a great feature on Miami Heat guard Dion Waiters. For any listeners that haven't read it yet, do so as soon as possible. Dion has been a very popular topic on this show, mostly because Wes and I are just really big fans of his energy and kind of the controlled chaos he seems to symbolize, whether that's deserved or not. What prompted you to choose Dion as the subject of your piece?
Well, Bleacher Report was kind of working on this thing about the five most exciting prospects coming into the season. And Dion, I thought, was really interesting because, you know, you don't really necessarily see him as a prospect. He's been in the league for 5 years, and he's even played on really experienced playoff teams. But at the same time, he's a guy who's really still starting to come into his own,
right,
and figure out what his role on the court is, just as far as ironing out the edges. And, you know, this opportunity with the Heat was the first time he really, really got to be in a role that he kind of thought that he deserved. I think a lot of that has to do with what we call the irrational confidence, his ego. But the Heat gave it to him, and you know, to his credit, when he was healthy, he delivered. So I think just based on that, you kind of have to look deeper into it and see, like, okay, like maybe there's something to this. Maybe he wasn't just you know, throwing stuff against the wall and seeing if it stuck. Like he could be suited to be taking on a higher role, and maybe we do need to look at him that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing with Dion. Actually, I've predicted that he'll probably lead the team in scoring, and that's kind of a bold, you know, guess, because, you know, with Hassan Whiteside and Goran Dragic on the team, clearly there are other players who are best suited perhaps for taking on that scoring load. But with Dion, he just does seem primed for it. I think that's where that whole concept of him being a prospect to watch out for comes into play. But you bring up the irrational confidence, and I mean, that's a great jumping board, especially when it comes to talking about Dion. What's that like, seeing that in person? Did you get a feel for that? Does it come across when you talk with him in Philadelphia?
Yeah, a little bit. Just in terms of like the way he tells his stories, I think he ties everything back to that, because to him, like, when I'm sure listeners here know his background, it was very, very, very tough background, and he kind of attributes his ability to get through that to the fact that he's so confident, to the fact that, you know, he didn't really look rationally at the way the cards were dealt to him, and that's why he's in this position. And I think that's an attitude he's definitely taken in the NBA. I think we saw it in Cleveland and in Oklahoma to varied results, but obviously to the best results of his career so far. And I think a lot of that has to do with him matching that confidence with some regimen, and that's a big thing in the piece. And just, you know, just because I was able to talk to Pat Riley, and I think that's the thing that Pat saw in him. He saw somebody who, you know, he had the stuff that you can't teach. Like, he had the self-belief. He's a really good shot creator, and that's, you know, there's natural scorers out there, and there's as much as you can do to improve that, which you definitely can. There's just some guys that are always going to be a little bit more gifted in that regard, and I think he saw that and then figured, and Spo as well, figured that, you know what, like, this guy's got the tools that are kind of rare to find. We can, if he's willing to buy in, figure out the rest of it with him.
Yeah, and so much of his coming onto the team was so much by chance. You know, obviously, he doesn't get re-signed by, you know, Oklahoma City. They rescind their qualifying offer to him, and then Dwayne Wade happens to leave to Chicago earlier that summer, and so all of a sudden there's this glaring hole at shooting guard, one that was, I guess, presumably going to be filled by the newly re-signed Tyler Johnson or Wayne Ellington. All of a sudden, Deion comes on board, and he has this really great opportunity, but it doesn't even kick into play right away because he's nursing some injuries. The rest of the team is kind of slapped together and going through injuries, and then all of a sudden, it really starts to click in place there. Did you get a chance to watch a lot of Miami last year? They weren't exactly one of the more exciting teams until that second half of the season.
I'll be honest, they weren't really on my radar up until the Golden State shot.
Right. No, and that Golden State shot, I mean, it's perfect. You know, I looking at that now, it's such a perfect moment. You know, I kind of feel like watching Deion, like, he almost like after he hits that shot and throws the mean mug, like, he could have just, like, dissipated into the air and called it a career. That was like a perfect way for him to end.
But, right, especially for him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, that would have been a perfect storybook ending, I think. But there is more to do for him. And I want to go back to Pat Riley a little bit because you brought that up on Danny LaRue's recent podcast. And you kind of talked about the correlation there with Riley. And you know, Riley, for all the gloss that he's well known for, you know, one of the points that I've made a lot is the fact that, you know, we tend to gloss over the Schenectady kind of blue collar roots that really helped define him. You know, he's known as this Showtime Armani suit wearing coach, but the reality is that he's probably from a much smaller town that kind of had just made his career out of working harder than everybody else. And he wanted that out of his players. So with Deion, you know, he really helped him and pushed him to that next level. And that really worked very well. What did Riley mention about that kind of relationship between him and Deion, or what he saw in Deion?
Right, and just to the point with Riley, like what you were saying about the conception of him, like, let's not forget the way that he coached those teams. I mean, it's actually not recent for me right now, but I'm reading When the Game Was Ours, which is Jackie McMullen's right. History of the Bird and Magic legacy in the 80s, and like Pat Riley was, we always knew this, but like, it's just always a good reminder. Pat Riley's a stickler, man. Like, the amount of times that he got mad at Magic for, you know, taking an endorsement deal, or like, you know, when he started befriending Larry Bird, like, that was just like, he was infuriated by that. There was, you know, like, and Magic always, like, I think it seems like always stood by him, but like, you know, by the end of their run, Riley had to resign because so many players were, you know, they weren't really happy with how intense he was. And then, like, the New York teams, I'm sure, like, that's a lot more recent. We know about that. Like, there's, like, he's legendary for being incredibly hard on his players and demanding everything that they can bring. And also just, like, the competitive fire that he has, I think, is something that, you know, in talking to him, like, it's funny to see him now because, you know, he's sitting in training camp and he's wearing like tan pants and like leather loafers. Like he looks like they're doing their thing in Boca Raton. He basically like, he looks like he could be a retiree there.
Right.
And no you can see either, that.
Right? No, he's not wearing any socks in
those. No socks for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, but you can sense that he's softened a little bit, especially in terms of being able to handle a player like Deion. I think he would find somebody like him a lot more frustrating. back when you know, he was in his prime, and you know, all the edges hadn't worn off. But yeah, I think it's an interesting relationship, because I don't know if this came out in the piece too much, because he was just like, you know, we're just trying to tell the story of the practice and everything, but you know, he has a lot of love and a lot of respect for Dion. Like, I think that much was very, very clear to me when I was talking to him, and I think he saw, like, okay, like, these are the circumstances that Dion came out of. There's obviously something there. It's just a matter of maybe this guy is misunderstood, and this is, you know, this area of the Heat that we're talking about, which is just taking on every reclamation project possible. So I think, you know, in that sense, it was also a good fit. I think if you were to look at, really, on the outside at least, just based on perception, any of the relationships that Pat has had with more of the recent players that they've signed, like, I think it'd be a little bit natural to question, like, how it works. I think you could do that with even, like, Whiteside, for example. You can't be like, oh, like, how do they get along? But, like, they do, because I think there's like a love of competition that really factors in, and also an understanding that, you know, like, I can bring out the best in this guy if he's under our roof, with our coaching staff, under my tutelage, with Spo, and that's kind of the gamble they take with these guys, but it does definitely seems to pay off.
Did you get any sense that Riley kind of had any kind of interactual, you know, personal interaction as far as, like, trying to coach Dion to that next level, or is that something that falls mostly on Spoelstra? I don't know if he got into those kinds of weeds with you, but
I think that when he was talking to me about what happened on that practice, which was Dion pretty much, I mean, Riley pretty much just reamed him out for coming in with his uniform on, and, you know, classic Riley sticklerisms, and for being hurt and just not having his body weight where he wanted Dion to have it, which is kind of funny because, you know, Dion was really, really close at the time, and I think he is there now. But just seeing, like, the precision that he expects all the time, and, like, just no excuses, that was, like, that definitely stuck out. But when he was talking to me about that, he said, you know, that was, like, I think that was one of the only times that he did it that season, because he said that he does like to leave that stuff out to Spo, but, like, he just, in a sense, I feel like he couldn't really help himself when he saw what was happening.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And that's that kind of sticking to that, and the precision that you mentioned, you know, it has been a hallmark of Pat's for and his tenure in Miami for a long time. You know, one of the things that forced Tim Hardaway off the team and had him bristle was, you know, him not meeting certain weight clauses and having those written into his contract every year, where you had to be at a certain weight and a certain body fat percentage. And, you know, being as successful as he was here in Miami and even in his tenure in Golden State, and to continuously have to meet those, that kind of gets to wearing on you. And you know, like you mentioned with the Lakers before, how he kind of burned his way out of those things. And it's just, Riley is such an interesting character. You know, obviously Miami and Heat fans in general kind of see him as this godfather character, you know, kind of sitting there in a smoky room making these deals and all the machinations surrounding him. But I'm always curious how people on the outside kind of view him. And I mean, obviously you're as plugged into the league as almost anybody, but, you know, I'm curious how you view, how you see Riley and the Heat in general.
I mean, the way I see it, I think the Heat are kind of underrated in that they're one of the NBA's best institutions, but we don't talk about them the way that we talk about Golden State or the way that we talk about the Spurs.
Right.
I mean, pretty much everybody who goes there improves. And I think I think a lot of that has to do with, or the reputation has to do with, the fact that they signed LeBron and Bosch. Like, you can kind of do the built, not bought narrative, but you know what? They planned this out better than anybody else, and they executed, and that means something. And it was also, like, pretty much the only place where, for even if it was for a very short window, that LeBron actually listened to somebody for, you know, just, I can't even imagine how short the window was. Maybe it was just a year, maybe it was two, but it was, you know, it's that and, like, the back end of last season with Tyronn Lue. So, and that has, and Cleveland, that has nothing to do with the institution. They just got lucky with a really, really good coach that was on their bench. But, you know, this is, it's just something that the Heat do. Like, it's something that Spo always says too. Like, he says, we're not for everyone. Like, pretty much, like, he was saying it like over and over again, talking about free agency and the guys that they decide to sign. And, you know, I think they're smart like that too. Like, the Spurs won't go out and sign a guy after talking to him, realizing that he's not a Spurs guy. Like, the Heat are pretty good about that too. And, you know, it seems like the players really, really respect the institution as much as, you know, what's happened with Wade and Bosch and in the ensuing years. I think people are going to look back at that with a lot more kindness than it was given in the moment, because, I mean, I think we know now Chris Bosch was not supposed to be playing basketball. And there isn't a team in the league that'll sign him right now. And, you know, multiple doctors from both sides have verified that. And then on the other side, I mean, like, what do you do? You give Wade already, like, the thing with Wade is, like, he already got the legacy contract. Like, you get how many contracts do you keep giving a guy just because he's in the league, right?
Right.
So, yeah, and then, you know what, Wade got bought out. And he was also the most expensive expiring contract in the league before he did. So, you know, like, they bounce back. That's the other thing. Like, I think this would look different if they didn't bounce back. Which, not to say that they really accomplished anything last year, but, like, they look very, very promising. And, like, they're pretty much, I think everybody thinks they're going to make the playoffs. So, I mean, yeah, it's just, I think we'll look back and realize that the Heat are one of those organizations. It's just, I don't know, it might take some time.
Right. Well, a quick reminder to make sure that you've subscribed to David Locke's Locked On NBA podcast for all of your national NBA news throughout the season, interviews with coaches, scouts, and league insiders. Also, check out what the rest of the Locked On podcast network has to offer, including shows for every NBA team and your favorite NFL team, including Locked On Dolphins and others. The Locked On podcast network, your team every day.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, BOOM.
So, you know, you had brought up in LaRue's podcast how Rowan Carney of The Crossover had written another feature on Dion. And one of the things that he kind of, you know, harped on in his, at least as a defining narrative throughout the piece, was, you know, that Dion, the personality that we kind of know, is not the real one that his friends know, that he's kind of quiet, loyal, devoted. Did you kind of get a sense of that as well in your interaction with Dion?
Yeah, definitely. I think like the biggest thing with Dion is when he says he doesn't care what people think, like, he's genuinely honest about that. He's not really like most athletes in that sense. So I think that's a big part of it. So that kind of, like, you know, just an attitude like that, it seeps into everything else. It makes sure, you know, he's somebody that's going to make sure that the people around him are the people who are supposed to be around him that are genuinely important to him and not just, like, you know, a bunch of handlers or anything like that.
But is that real, though? I mean, because, you know, players, I've talked to a bunch, you've talked to a bunch, and, you know, they're kind of notoriously thin-skinned, and they pay attention to these things, as we all know. And when he says it, is it because of the tragedy or the tragedies that have shaped his life, and that's kind of like why he's so much more perhaps thick-skinned than others, like these kinds of things? Whatever you say about him doesn't really matter because he's seen bullets and blood and everything else that helped shape him to be the person that he is.
You know, I think when he says that, I do tend to believe it. And there's a lot of athletes where I don't believe it with. And also, you know, the biggest tell is after the piece comes out, right? Like, that's when you're made aware of certain sensitivities, and I didn't hear anything bad back from Dion's group. So there's that. That's always an easy tell when you write a feature and then, you know, there's like somebody pissed off after. So, yeah, like nothing like that happened. So there's that too. And there's also, I mean, like when we talked a lot about perception, and, a lot of it got left on the cutting room floor, and right. He talked about the Players Tribune thing. He was like, first of all, he's utterly shocked at the reaction that it got. And then I asked him, like, does he, like, do you regret not doing this earlier? Like, do you think that it ruined your reputation to an extent, or like even your opportunities in the league? Because we also spent some time talking about league politics and just like the way that players are perceived plays unfairly into playing sometimes, yes, playing time and things like that.
Yes.
And having said that, he was still very much insistent that, you know, it's like maybe it hurt him a little bit, but at the end of the day, like, if he was the type of person who cared about any of that, like, it just, there have been so many instances in his life, not even his childhood, but even him being in the NBA, that type of stuff, caring about it, would have broke him down. And I think when you look back at his tenure in the league, it definitely rings true. Like, he faced criticism pretty much from his college career in Syracuse down to Cleveland, where it really just bubbled up. And then, you know, in Oklahoma, I think things definitely started to stabilize, but there's still the memes and, like, you know, just like stuff like Katie, like, yelling at him, and they're very close. So it's just like, you know, it's fine. But like those things out of context can definitely paint a picture. And he never really seemed to care about that.
I wish more of that had come through there. I know that's not always your decision, obviously, but I wish more of what had wound up, as you put on the cutting room floor, had included, because that's, I think, one of the fascinating things about Deion is the narratives that follow him and the perception and everything else. And one of the things I've written about him is that he's kind of like one of a few players in the league that I think tend to be viewed, like, they tend to kind of be scapegoats in that classical meaning of it, that they kind of carry the sins of the village, and that's how people see them and perceive them, and they're kind of like viewed as these odd goofballs, but in reality, they're just, I mean, the fact that they're here in the league, period, you know, they have an incredible amount of ability and talent, and they've worked an incredibly hard amount just to get to this point, and then still somehow people are dismissive of it because of 1 5-second vine for him clapping for the ball when LeBron has it in his hands, and that kind of dismisses everything that he's accomplished to get up to this point.
Right. I mean, at the same time, it's, you know, there's a reason Deion was getting criticized, right? So it definitely cuts both ways.
Uh-huh.
And it's not always just about perception. I mean, for as much as, like, the one thing that I tend to think about a little bit is that, you know, Deion was one of the guys that LeBron James wanted to mentor, and that didn't really seem to work out. And I think he himself will say that he looks back at that time with regret and just wishes that he had bought in and just enjoyed the moment. And as he put it, like, where the end up in the piece was that he had just shut the hell up.
Right.
And so there's definitely reasons why he had that perception at first. I mean, if you have the opportunity to be mentored by a guy like that and you're too busy worrying about, you know, your field goal attempts, then I think it's definitely a little bit of a problem. Like, yeah, the things that you see on the court, they manifest from somewhere.
Right.
And
but in context of what's happened with Kyrie, does that change things a little bit, though? Like, you know, LeBron is a domineering person.
Yeah, but it's not easy. Kyrie's Kyrie, yeah, so.
Yeah, I get it. But I just, you know, like, one of the things that I've always kind of pointed out to Heat fans and listeners and stuff like that is that, you know, Dwayne Wade is known for mentoring players, and that, you know, everybody thought he was going to be so successful in Chicago as a mentor. And I had said for years, I never saw that. Like, his interaction with Michael Beasley, like, you know, early on he was young, and then he had this incredible level of success so early on that I don't think a lot of people expected from him. And he's partnered with Shaq and kind of seeing as this other player who can carry a team to a championship, and he does in 2006. And then all of a sudden, you know, a couple years later, the team is falling apart. Michael Beasley's on the roster, and Wade did not get along with Beasley. I mean, he was not the you know, typical mentor. He's not like Richard Jefferson is in Cleveland. He's not a guy who's going to put an arm around you and kind of talk to you and say, look, this is what you could have done differently. This is how you should approach things. And he said it. He's like, I'm more of a mentoring from by example. It's like, oh, that's not really mentoring. That's like, you know, kind of being a dick and kind of standing off. But, you know, when you know, LeBron is difficult. Like, he's very exacting and demanding, and I think that can be a difficult environment to want to work and play in.
I think to an extent you're right, but then I also look at players like J.R. Smith, who LeBron took under his wing.
Okay.
And we can see how much J.R. has thrived. And I think the biggest difference in that is age and maturity. J.R. had been around the block a couple times. And I think, you know, he was just at a moment where he knew that it was do or die here, or else he might not be in the league. And I think that's kind of the similar place that Deion ended up in Miami. And I think maybe if that situation in Cleveland had happened closer to now in this juncture of his career, things could have ended differently there. And, you know, for as much as LeBron is exacting, like, we just did an aria on Pat Riley.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's just a matter of him being ready for that type of thing.
Okay.
And, you know, it's also, you know, it's natural. It's growth. Like, and a lot of these guys don't. Every young player coming into the league has some sort of immaturity that they need to work out. And, you know, Deion happened to be very public.
Absolutely.
And I think that definitely hurts him a little bit too. And it was also a little less justified, like the way, you know, it's, you can say what you will about Kyrie, but Kyrie is also delivered in the finals. And, you know, I'm not really a big Kyrie fan. And, you know, I think it's kind of, I don't know. It just kind of like, yeah, go ahead, go bet on yourself. But yeah, all right. Like, okay. Like, you're leaving LeBron James. You're probably kind of a loser.
Well, it's funny because my co-host was a big proponent of trying to acquire Kyrie here. And, you know, I wasn't as much because I thought it might cost a lot. And I happen to be a big Goran Dragic fan, and everything that he's done with his team, you know, he kind of had to take a step back when Dwayne was on the team, and now he's kind of come into his own, and I think we're starting to see him reach a really high level, mm-hmm. even if he's a little older. But, you know, a lot of Heat fans were all aboard the acquisition of Kyrie, so it's interesting that you would point out that you're not necessarily much of a fan.
Did you hear what Deion had to say about that?
About what? About acquiring?
About Kyrie.
Yeah, I forgot exactly what it was. Oh, he said he could play alongside him, right? I thought he was.
Yeah, but as long as Kyrie understands who the alpha is.
that's perfect. I mean, that, you're not going to get a more Deion-esque
statement. Yeah.
And that's great.
That's what you got to love about him. Like, yeah. Every player in the league feels like that.
Yeah, yeah.
They all do.
Yeah, they're just,
he just
not
says
as
it.
Public. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I've told the story, but for your edification, like the first time I covered Deion was when he was Oklahoma City, and he was one of his first few games after the trade to acquire him, and he was in Orlando, and it was a record-setting performance from by the Thunder where they scored, I can't remember now, I think it was like 70-something points in the first half, and most field goals in a regular season game in Thunder Sonics history. So it was this incredible performance. And Deion comes out, and there's a media throng, of course, in the locker room afterwards, and we're all waiting for him. And the guy comes out in nothing but a towel, as comfortable as anybody could possibly be at any point. I mean, regardless of what he's wearing or not wearing in this case, he was just so comfortable, and he felt like he was deserving of that kind of star level of attention, even on a team with, you know, Russell Westbrook, who would eventually win an MVP, and Kevin Durant, who would eventually win an MVP. And there's Deion thinking, oh, I'm, you know, part of this big three on this team. I need as much attention as possible, and it's certainly well-deserved. He's amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty awesome.
So one last question about Deion then. Do you think his success is sustainable this year? Do you think that there might be a little bit of a digression now that he's gotten this big contract? I mean, he doesn't seem wired that way, but I'm curious if, you know, when you ask him about next season and his thoughts on it, you know, or this season now, you know, coming today, what he might be able to do or accomplish?
Well, the two things that we talked about just playing-wise, so it was more personality-driven, so we didn't really get too much into the X's and O's of stuff, but the one thing that his trainer told me that they worked on was just his body, and because the Heat training regimen was just, like, a shock to him, and I think just the minutes and everything, and he dealt with a lot of injuries. I'm really, like, I don't know, this ankle thing kind of, I mean, that, it just doesn't seem like a good omen, just like, avoiding surgery. I don't really know how that's going to go, but
yeah, we talked
aside from that, like, it seems like they worked.
Yeah, we talked to a Heat reporter, and, I mean, it kind of seems like people are overstating a little bit, but you're right. I mean, there's definitely a concern that it could crop up at some point this year.
Okay. Well, I hope it's fine. That would be obviously ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did a lot of body work, and I think just getting Deion to that 220 and 6% body fat that Riley wanted him at, I think he is either there edging closer and closer than he was when he got yelled at. That's for sure. And, I think the cutting down thing is just going to be a constant process for him.
Sure.
And the other thing is just something Riley was talking a lot about was just working on, like, spot efficiency. A lot of areas, like, finishing around the rim is a big one.
Yes.
And, you know, like, of course, like, the line in the piece of Pat Riley was astonished that Deion could be a 65% free throw shooter. So just stuff like that can be, like, these spots that, you know, more easily than others can be efficient for him. And, you know, at the same time though, like he kind of goes back and forth because Deion wasn't healthy for a lot of the season. So I'm sure that especially like when in the games that he was coming back, that definitely negatively impacted his numbers. But at the same time, I mean, like he shot like what, like 43%. From three at certain point, like that's gotta, it doesn't really seem like, yeah. So there are points where he was just like super hot and there are points where he was just, you know, like just coming back from injuries and stuff. So like, I mean, he had to be incredibly hot if we were like, you know, just having those games in the calculation and also still having those incredibly high numbers. So I think some of that is definitely not sustainable, but I think in general, we're going to see like a version of Deion that hopefully is more healthy and is just more of a complete player. And I guess, yeah, it's just like the question with the Heat this year. It's very like, it's just feels very boom or bust based on how the season went, even though it shouldn't. I mean, all that stuff was informed by injuries, but you know, it's going to be exciting. They are definitely, when they're healthy, one of the most dynamic offensive teams to watch. And obviously like their defense is very good too. So I think, you know, it's gonna be interesting. I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah, I think a lot of us feel that way. Okay, a couple of more quick Heat related notes, and we'll let you go. Where do you stand on the Hassan Whiteside versus Joel Embiid debate?
Yo, like, get your mans.
So you're not supportive of Whiteside?
Not in this particular instance. No, I mean, I love seeing a guy go up with Draymond Green just because I don't. You know, just anybody going up against Draymond Green is very exciting. But, I mean, come on. Like, Embiid could eat, like, healthy Embiid could just destroy Whiteside. Just eat him up for lunch. I watched some of that preseason game, too. And, I mean, they were going, like, they were honestly, like, they were pretty even for most of the game. Like, they got their shots at each other. But, yeah, it wasn't, like, I don't know. It's weird. Like, it's not, like, it felt like nothing was really going. Like, there's no real problems. And Son just starts beefing everybody. But. Yeah. Oh man, I just love that. I love that we can live in an era where, like, you can like put plus minus into a roast as an NBA player, and then people in the comments like replying to him just being like, "Drag him, yes!" It's like, what? What is going on? I love it though.
I haven't seen the T-shirt yet, but I know those will crop up soon, right? I mean,
yeah, I'm sure.
Where do you stand on Goran Dragic?
Yeah, I think he's actually kind of poised to, like, not in a, just looking at the way this team is built right now, in a way that might reflect poorly on his numbers, but not on his actual game, be poised to take a bit of a step back, just because I think, like you said, I think you're onto something with Deion Waiters, with him leading the team in scoring. And I think there's a lot of other spot up threats, Johnson, Ellington, that are gonna have to get some touches. And they're also guys who can, like, it's not really necessary that all that lead to assists for Goran too, because there's a bunch of creators on the team as well. I think, you know, things will stabilize a little bit, and as a result of that, Goran's numbers might not be as good. But, I mean, I'm a big fan of his game in general. I think he's, like, he's definitely one of the craftiest point guards in the league. And he's very, very measured, I think. Like, I really, I really appreciate that in a point guard, especially, you know, in this era where everyone's like pretty much boom or bust. Like, he's a guy that can really like turn it on based on what's going on in the game. Like, I think if you can just have a season like that where like he's like the guy who's making sure that everybody else is getting their touches, and he's obviously like he's an incredible drive and kick guy. Yep. And so he can definitely create for people, but I just think based on the way that I think the Heat's offense is going to look, like, it might not really reflect in the numbers because, you know, he's the primary action, and against a lot of teams these days, like, you got to have step two and step three.
Yeah. This is last point then. Does D Wade come back to Miami? Does he wear a Heat uniform at some point?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Really? Okay. No, I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, we knew the buyout was coming. I think a lot of us expected to be more towards the trade deadline or, you know, midway through the season. I guess we thought Chicago might eat some of that salary, but it's apparently not, or eat more of it than they actually wound up doing so. And he, you know, he already said that he wasn't getting bought out, that he didn't really want to, and so he kind of changed course. But I think a lot of people, and for Heat fans in particular, they would really love to see that, although he's not a particularly good fit at this point in his career.
No, there's enough shooting guards on this team. Yeah. Like, one thing is certain.
36-year-old shooting guards that can't shoot aren't particularly in high demand. all right. Well, that's pretty much it. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And, you know, just a reminder to all of our listeners that they can send mailbag questions for next week to lockedonheat@gmail.com or tweet them using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Make sure to subscribe to the show to get podcasts automatically every morning. They go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Our theme song by CeeLo Keys. Outro music courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.